standing in person, Jerry Hatfield. And his talk is on climate impacts on agriculture in the United States, understanding the value of past observations.
I was just thinking I'd let Cynthia give mine and just see what it looked like. Thank you all, and thanks for the invitation to be here. And I'll just go and put this in perspective for you and everything else, just so you know. Since you used to think I was at the Soil Tilth Lab, we did away with that. We are now the National Laboratory for Agriculture and the Environment to really look at a much broader mission than what we've done in the past. Basically, because we could never figure out what tilth was, we just moved on. Let me give you a little background on this, and that's that one of the things when we talk about climate change is that I don't believe we go back enough and think about the value of historical data, because we need to look at that in terms of the impact of technology, the impact of climate in all of this. And well, all these data are really available. We can pull it off of the NAS sites for on state level yields, county level yields. We can pull it out of the National Climatic Data Center in terms of looking at the weather observations. But history allows us to understand the potential improvements in crop yields to cope with climate change. When we really go back and look and begin to understand this, we can say if we talk about adaptation, as Tom pointed out in his talk, it's really about precipitation. Where do we need to be managing? Do we need to be managing soil water? Do we need to be looking at changes in planting dates? You know, what's the role of CO2 in all of this as well? And so when we look at historical yield trends across that, and I'll just use Iowa corn as an example, you see the advantage or the impact of the addition of a major change in technology in the 50s, the advance of hybrid corn. And when you really begin to do that, you see that all of a sudden yields went up there. We started out only increasing about 8.96 kilos per year. But all of a sudden, when we got into the hybrid corn, we're at 124 kilos per year in terms of yield increase. That line that's running parallel, it's not quite parallel to the other one, is that you'll see the impact of that when we go on, is that I went through each of these yield records that we talk about and isolated the maximum yields in this. And I have a rationale for doing that, as I'll explain as we go through this. But you get to see all this variation that occurs. Has to be Kansas corn. You can see that actually in Kansas corn, there's a flattening of that. And you know, as you know, have we reached a maximum in lots of our different places? And is technology playing out, or is genetics playing out in terms of its impact? Here's Kansas winter wheat. Interesting thing in Kansas winter wheat is that it goes up. There's a lot of variation around that. You look at that trend of the maximum yield curve is actually much higher in slope than is our trend through that as we go through those different pieces. And then we get into Kansas sorghum. And going clear back into the 1920s, we continue to make improvement in yields in Kansas sorghum. You see that those maximum years, which are really quite interesting, you can always pull those out, and they fit a separate population of their own as we go through this, are much different than that mean yield and actually is increasing quite a bit. And it's actually about 65 kilos per hectare compared to the yield trend line, which is only about 58 through there. So those lines continue to do much more in terms of improving the technology of what's there. And this is Iowa soybean. We continue to make advances in terms of production. Now, you should have been all remembering through those that what those distributions look like. There will be a test in terms of how all this behaves. Because as we take and look at those pieces of the puzzle, there was one interesting year that a crop that really began to come out of this whole population, and that was Texas cotton. And here we've got a couple different things that went on. In that we see an eradication program that came into fruition. We see an improvement in terms of genetics. And all of a sudden in this yield population, starting in about 2002, That whole population just changed in this. It's one of the only crops that I can find in all that in which we saw a major impact of a technology advance in terms of what was going on. And so when you look at this, however, there's been some years in the past in which it's dropped back down. The high year was actually in the middle of that record. But nevertheless, I think we've got to give credit to the fact that we can, through technology, breeding efforts, management efforts, a number of things, impact our yields and come closer to yield potential in terms of what's going on. So when we look at all this, we begin to understand that there are some dynamics to what's happening. So you look at the yield trends, they do reflect the improvement of genetics and management. And we look at that piece. There are years in which the maximum yield has been achieved. And those also, when you look at that, represent a linear response across the period of observations, if you pick those out. And the maximum yields, when you look through the record, also have a higher slope than the yield trend line that's set through that. So pull out a number of different things. And so what I did with this data is go back, instead of looking at deviations around the trend line, is look at deviations away from maximum yield. Ken and I have spent a lot of time talking about maximum yields in crop production. And so we haven't looked at this in terms of all these different pieces. So I went back and looked at maximum or distributions for maximum yields, and I'll just show you this. This is Kansas soybeans. And what you see in that deviation is anywhere from no deviation up to about 50% deviation from the maximum trend line across there. And that there's no variation, there's no pattern to that. It's just almost random in terms of the deviations through that. Iowa soybean fares a lot better than Kansas soybeans. And when we do the frequency distributions, I'll explain this as we go along. But you see those deviations occur, but there are some years in which we have lost almost 40% away from what the maximum should be that particular year. Oklahoma winter wheat, there's a few years in which about half of that yield has disappeared in all of this. So when you look at it, you get an entirely different view of what weather has done to us in terms of our impact on crop production. South Dakota spring wheat, just to put it in perspective, there are some years that exceed 60% yield loss in terms of its overall impact, weather's overall impact from lots of different reasons. So if you look at those sets of observations, what you end up with, you find that these deviations from maximum yield show a large variation among years. And that there's no trend of towards decreasing the deviation across this period of record. Because one of the things I was very interested in was, has our technology reduced the potential impact of weather over these past years? And the answer is no, it hasn't. The G by E by, I added an M to it, the G by E by genetics, by environment, by management interaction, that E in management component, or the E component of that, is still just as big today as it was at the beginning of the introduction of corn hybrids. And I think that's very important for us to realize that if we're going to stabilize yields into the future, we're going to have to think about how that crop's responding to the various inputs that are out there. So then what I did for all these different sites, and I don't show them all, is just come into the frequency distribution of these deviations. And this is Midwest soybeans. And what I did is I'll just use the Midwestern states and I'll put Kansas into the Midwest as well. And you begin to look at the distributions of the deviations. And what you find is that when you start moving from Indiana, which is a much more stable precipitation area, as you move across the Corn Belt, we actually have a changing frequency as well as an intensity of rainfall across there. Much less variation of rainfall deviations in Indiana compared to Iowa, and you see it reflected in the yields across there. Indiana has very few years in which there's 40%, very few that there's 30%. Most of the deviations away from its maximum trend line are in that 5 to 10%, 20% category. Move into Iowa, it spreads out a little bit more. Iowa soybean, again, spread all over because of the variation of rainfall. You look at the same thing in terms of Midwestern corn. Indiana corn, a lot more variation, a half of, there's some years that there was 50% loss, not near as many years as there was in Illinois corn, and then you see even a few more at the 40 and 50% in Iowa, and then you look at Kansas corn production, and again, it's spread all over till we end up with 70% of the yield loss coming across that. I'll throw you the real shocker. This is winter wheat. Don't bet on winter wheat futures. It's the moral of this story. Look at the distribution of yield losses relative to potential maximum, both for Kansas and South Dakota. South Dakota's yield loss has some 80% years, 70% years, but you see them distributed out across that whole period of record or the whole frequency distribution. In fact, there's very few years in which it only has a 5 or 10% loss. And so you really get hammered in those environments in terms of the overall puzzle that's out there. Same thing in Kansas. So the advantage of looking at these frequency distributions, because I did correlate those back to the weather and everything else, because there are some very interesting things that begin to occur. And when you look at this deviation from maximum yield, there's a pattern where precipitation becomes more variable. The strongest correlation when we begin to look at average temperatures or max min temperatures, precipitation tops it all. And Tom isn't here to applaud, I don't see him. And because it really is the driver. It trumps everything else in this overall period of record. It's a dominant factor that really is driving our yield variation in here, except when you go back and start analyzing the high yield years. And the high yield years, particularly in corn, have examples of below normal temperatures during the August and September period, lengthening that grain filling period, something that we've known physiologically. But it's those high yielding years that begin to show us they don't have to have that excess precipitation to make it work. They really have got to have that combination of temperature as well as the precipitation patterns that are out there. And we see that even occur when we went back and looked at isolated years in Kansas, looking at their yield record. It's those lower rain or that lower temperature during the grain filling period that has a positive advantage on us. So how do we manipulate that crop? Because as Linda's data points out, we're seeing a change in nighttime temperatures that are going to impact us. We're going to see also an increasing frequency of high temperature events, which will also negatively impact us. And our historical data shows all those different pieces coming into play, but we haven't asked ourselves that question enough to say, how do we really begin to think about adaptation? And how do we really begin to manipulate our cropping systems to handle some extreme variations in weather that's there? So the implications are, if we want to look at climate impacts, we need to be focusing on water management to create sufficient water supply during the grain filling period. We've really got to get back to ensuring that we have adequate water within that profile, because that's going to pay dividends in terms of increasing yield stability. Management practices, either planting dates to synchronize the grain filling with the cooler minimum temperatures, would also impact yield, but we really have got to be able to guess what that season looks like. So water management is still going to be the key issue in terms of being able to stabilize our yields, because we don't have that good forecast yet in terms of what that season looks like. As a lot of producers tell me, if you could tell me exactly what the weather is going to be like, I'd know how to manage my crop. And I think there's a lot of truth in what they observe. So with that, thank you.
Thank you.